Welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. My name is Amit Paul, and today we get to dive into some really hot topics. We might be talking about AI. We might be talking about the... Well, I resist the word a little bit, but maybe we'll be talking about the dire state of our world. Most of all, I get to talk with someone that I consider to be a dear friend and co-explorer. So we'll give more context soon, but very welcome to the podcast, Fredrik Fors.
Thank you very much, Amit, and I'm super glad to be here. And I look forward to exploring this conversation with you. It's always a pleasure, and it always ends up with some insights or more.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, I have that same feeling. You've written a book, and the book is out or about to come out, right?
It comes out 1st of September.
Yeah, so it's about to, well, then it's about to come out when this comes out, and we're sort of in the second half of August right now, and it's called Unnum. Good. So that's also part of why we're having this conversation. But before we get into all of that, I'm going to follow my normal pattern and ask you the hardest question, probably, that we're going to deal with today. Who are you, Fredrik Fors?
Yeah, and that is a super hard question for me. The simple answer is that I don't know. And it is a question that I have been exploring for many years. And my experience is that once you go beyond the symbols, that seems to be the question without an answer. Who am I is also like a classic Zen Buddhist question. And also like looking at modern research, I mean, the self is not really something constant. At most, it's kind of like a fluid construction co-created with your surroundings. So like in this conversation. But to answer your questions with symbols that are more relatable, I am a father, I am a serial entrepreneur, and what I call a life explorer. And with that, I mean exploring both the inner and outer world. And sometimes that becomes startups, sometimes travels. One time I buried myself, another time I jumped off a cliff while skiing and broke my back. But right now, the most present is the release of my first novel, Unnum, with the subtitle AI, God or Servant. So that, and I guess that also means that I'm an author.
Nice. I still want to acquire that title of author. I haven't deserved it yet.
I'm kind of in the process of like realizing that I'm actually an author. I was taking photos, like press photos, and it was like, yeah, I shoot like actors and those kinds of people. I don't shoot that many otters. And I'm like, maybe I am an otter. Like, so it's kind of fun, like how you like go through life and just do like one step at a time. And then sometime during the way, something is created. And then you kind of become something or someone in that context. And I think that's one of the gifts of being alive.
You said something, though, that I wanted to, because I think we're going to get into territory where it might be good to have unpacked that. But you mentioned something around you would answer it with symbols. You would answer who you were with symbols. Maybe that's not the most conventional way of thinking about stories and thinking about titles and things that we have done in our life. Would you speak some more to that?
Yes, that's a good question, and that's something that I've been thinking about a lot. The way I see the world is, you can see that it's kind of different layers. And if you take like the AI language, it's kind of as a code. So we have symbols like brands, or nations or whatever. And that's a way to communicate and help us to like, okay, this symbol, take water, for instance. Like if you look at the water bottle called Evian, you know it's water, and you know it's like good quality water. So that symbol is kind of useful in that sense. But we also construct ourselves and our organizations and our society with different kinds of symbols. And this is I really enjoyed your question, because this is something I learned from my project as well. Like, if you go deeper into, like, as I see it, the patterns of reality and your own pattern as well, and you see that, okay, I'm a human being, I have some needs. We did a workshop with the community I created, and there were like three things that people wanted. It was like connection, belonging, and meaning. And I think that's quite universal. That we are kind of, our beings are created in that sense. And if you go like one step further, like, what does that mean? What is belonging? And different groups and different cultures have different symbols. In order to be part of that group. But underneath my experience and my observation is that we're kind of alike when you take away the symbols. And if you take more steps away, then there comes like nations or organizations or religions and so on. And then there's a lot of symbols. And there's a lot of things you need to mentally be aware of in order to fit in. Like, this is good, this is bad, and so on. And that's also something I think is quite interesting, because it can be total opposite in different cultures. If you're born into an ISIS family, you have a totally different view of what is right and wrong compared to if you're born into a modern Western world. And you can argue that it is like something that are more right, like in a more deeper sense. And I think that's something that is good to strive for, like to find something that's more true or more constant than something else. And with that, I can also jump into like to connect this to your everyday life. So to me, like all the companies and all the products I do, I don't want it to be separation between how I live my everyday life, how I am as a father, and the things that I create or co-create. Because I think that's very important, because my experience and my observation is that even if you're super good with symbols and creating big companies, organizations, or talking about consciousness or impact or whatever, it's like, yeah, that sounds good. Sounds really good. Like, that sounds like you're a super good person. But how is your everyday life, and how are your intimate relationships? Like, how well are your children? Like, and I think if you are aware of that, then you're always able to benchmark, or that might not be the right word, but you can always like check if it's true. Because if my intimate relationships does not work, if I'm not a trustworthy friend, then what is it that I'm actually creating in the other world? And even if I get the, in this symbolic world, like important people or people who are seen as good or has been good in creating a story that people think they are good, that doesn't mean that the life that they live in the everyday or their, how do you say, their algorithmic point in the system is in a good vibration. That becomes a bit.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks for deepening that inquiry. And it's interesting what you say about just, you know, connection, belonging, and meaning, because it rhymes so well. Mm. I have another podcast project that's called the Meaningful Work Podcast, and sort of interviewing experts and entrepreneurs and people about sort of how they build their company culture and what they try to do. And of course, that's sort of more, these people are really cutting edge, and everybody speak about those three terms. Like it's what seems to be the symbols that we are longing for at the moment in a way. And yet maybe that is pointing to something which is a deeper need or a deeper liberation. And I really appreciate how you put it together in terms of like, I'm hearing you point to a discrepancy between what it is to be connected and how I can signal to the world that I'm connected. There can be a discrepancy between those two things. And connected is hard, maybe. So maybe let's go with successful, like what it is to be successful, or how I signal that things are successful, and how our current Western paradigm is very much relying on these communication tools for making that distinction or making that signaling that to our environment.
And I think what I'm usually like trying to be aware of is that if I feel I need validation, that I need approval of my story, for instance, like I want to have proof for being like a good father, then it's usually because I might not feel enough as a father. And if I put the energy into trying to make other people say, oh, well, you're such a good father, that's not the right way to put my focus and energy. The best way is to like, okay, what is it that why do I not feel enough in this situation? And like, okay, then focus actually on my child and not the approval of others. Because the approval of others, then I need to, again, like be within the symbols and the stories of other people who wants to like, this is how they see a good parent. But my child is unique, and I am who I am. I'm not like, it's not really possible to fit into this idea of right and wrong. And if you go there, you usually lose yourself. But I want to go back to actually, because I think it's a good example when we created the tech farm and canine co-living. We call it conscious co-living. And the reason why I did that was because I had started some other companies before who were focused on like helping people into jobs and the climate challenge and solar energy and so on. But it was like this, my realization was like, we need a different behavior, a different form of consciousness, because it seems to be an underlying pattern, like that we need, I think we need more and more, and it's not enough. And the idea was to like, okay, how does human works? I mean, we are animals basically who lives in packs, and we need each other to thrive. And at the same time, Stockholm or Sweden was at that time the most individualistic country in the world with the least traditions. And Stockholm has had the most single households in the world. So like self-realization was the thing. And but still, as animals or human beings, we needed this like belonging, connection, and meaning. And my idea was to like to create a modern pack or modern tribe, and still have the possibility of self-realization. And the idea was to, if we create a safe space, well, people feel that they can be themselves, then they might not need as many symbols and might not need to consume as much. Mm. And the vision was to create 100 houses around the world in a global network. So it became like transformation points all over the world. So we created a place in Stockholm in the center with 50 people from 25 countries. And we also did a research project connected to that. So we applied for from the government, from Innova, and we got 10 million kroners. Like $1 million. And the thesis of that project was that we could decrease living space by 60% compared to a single household, and at the same time increase the well-being of the people living there. So we had different partners in that project, so like City of Stockholm and KI, Karolinska Institute, and University of Stockholm, Stanford was also part of the project, and attendance organization and so on. It was like a lot of great symbols who had a lot of resources, and that's also what's also needed in this sense, because you weren't allowed to build houses like this or live like this. You needed to have all the different organizations on board, so there was also a political incentive to for people to be able to create living conditions which the idea was that it was more suitable for human and their well-being and for them to thrive. And now we come to culture, because we lived in the house and we had workshops with the 50 people living there. These 50 people from 25 countries between 19 and 54 years old. They were entrepreneurs, artists, researchers, students, and so on. So we did these workshops. And this belonging, connection, and meaning, that's kind of my translation from these workshops. Yeah, and that's when we talk about symbols and also living your everyday life and every step of the way as in peace. I mean, to me, like if you have peace inside yourself, then that's some kind of measurement of, and that's the discrepancy between like my inner and outer world. And to me, I had like this deep insight, and I saw like on a deep level what was possible to create, and then like how can I make it happen within the system. And then you need a lot of symbols, and also you need a lot of money in order for this to happen. But with every like application or every interaction with politicians or every interaction with investors or media, kind of twist your language a little bit to fit within the system. And slowly, it kind of might become something else. And even though it's a magical place who changed a lot of people's lives, there's 500 people who have lived there. It's still up and running since 2016, I was not in peace, because now, once again, I was running a big company. So my everyday life was not, I created like the ideal, but I myself was not, I was, how do you say, I didn't have time to live the life that I actually wanted to. And it ended up with me being picked up by an ambulance from the house. So in the end, I pushed myself way too far. And that's kind of when I ended up in nature. And that's kind of when I had time to reflect on this intense journey. And that's kind of created a seed for the book.
Yeah, let's lean towards the book. I find it interesting because I've known you since during maybe the later parts of your recovery, or I've always known you from a pretty deep place. And so I get curious about who the intense Frederick was. I'm curious, it feels so far away from how I know you that you get caught up in the intensity and get caught up in those, in those stories. I'm just like, what? What is he talking about? I get curious about now looking back, what about the intensity or what about the success was it that, what was the essence of that? Why did it hook you? Why did it get to you?
That's a really, really good question. And that I've been thinking about a lot. I think I've always had a depth and the awareness and presence. I think I've always had that. But I also been I grew up in a very, very entrepreneurial family and in middle class or maybe even upper middle class. There was a lot of things going on. And I actually really appreciate that now because there's also a lot of creativity in that sense. But I think it was a lot of fear as well, because if that is how most people live, and I mean, it's also the belonging, connection, and meaning. It's okay, I have this connection with something deep and this stillness. And I want my friends. I want to be with my friends there as well. And I want to show people the richness of being able to have space for the life that is here. And I guess I also in one way it was based on fear, and in another way I said I didn't know how to do it in another way. This was the best way I could do it. And you also need a lot of resources in order to create this, in many ways, utopian community. But there's a lot of mixed feelings even now inside of me, because I can see the potential. And even though we succeeded in many ways, and it also was the starting point of spreading this kind of co-living within Sweden and Northern Europe, I always saw something on a deeper level. And that's the book is kind of created from that depth as well. And I guess that's something within me that I'm just curious about. I really, really want to understand the underlying structures of this universe. And we are human beings. So in that sense, I need to understand how I function, how other people function, how we interact, and how humans and our kind of consciousness interact with the world around us. And another thing is that, like, it depends on what kind of, like, language you use and what kind of perspective. But they say, like, 50% is, like, genetics and 50% is environment. And the DNA that has come this far is the one, now I'm generalizing, the one that focusing on surviving and reproducing. And surviving, like, if you go back to, many people say, like, brain scientists, that our brains are kind of the same, the hardware is kind of the same as it were when we were, like, hunter and gatherers. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a harsh environment. If you left the pack or was, if you weren't allowed to be part of it, then you was kind of a secure death. Like 10-15% were killed within the tribe, and so on. It was like a really, really hard environment. So if you don't fit in, then there's a huge risk for your life. And even if you survive, you need to find someone who you can actually reproduce your genes with. So I think that's like that's like a basic thing. And in that sense, in order to be able to be within your own system and be comfortable with emotions that are intense, you kind of need to train in situations or aspects where you might be rejected or die or whatever it can be. So you need to train your nervous system and your emotional capacity. And men usually use like a more action-oriented strategy, and women usually work with more like emotional coping mechanism. And to me, my action-oriented worked until that time. But it didn't after I burned out, because my body didn't function. I couldn't raise my pulse in 3 years. So I needed to develop my emotional capacity to handle intense emotions. And I guess that's why I'm also able to stay.
Yeah, this now it feels right to move towards the book. I had one, like, but it, because it relates to your book, I think directly as well. But there's like this ringing sort of realization in my head around. There's, for one, there's this movie called Crazy Wise, which I think is kind of fun.
I haven't seen that one though.
It's basically an ode to the crazy people. Like, it's like there's an invitation to remember that we didn't always look at crazy as something that needed to be locked away. It was just a different way of knowing the world. And so they look at like indigenous peoples, and they look at also crazy people in our, the quote unquote crazy people in our midst that seem to know things in a different way than most of us do. And I'm also just like in that, in terms of what you mentioned with the tribe and with the belonging and so forth. I mean, there's also that curiosity in me around how, what type of behaviors that we weren't tolerating. Like, when were you not belonging in the tribe? I think that was probably a not as narrow window as we're dealing with today in terms of how we need to fit into the machine and how we need to kind of, eliminate diversity versus what was there then and how you were useful and so forth. I think there seems to be research pointing to like that there were more liminal figures could take other roles in the community, so to say, than just being left to die. I mean, that happened too, of course, but nonetheless.
That's interesting.
But what I wanted to drive towards was like that point of diversity, and that really brings me into the book in a way. Because do you want to how do we do this? How do we get into the book? Do you want to like do the elevator pitch of like what it's about? And then we can kind of sort through it, or
I honestly think that you're better at the elevator pitch than I am about the book.
Okay. Okay. I just wanna like invite the listener to also really bring with them this place that you've kind of, I mean, very spottedly, of course, like it's not like we've gone through your entire life story, but nonetheless, like all these experiences that you've had, they're the foundation for where this thing is written from. And that foundation, as you speak about it, it's fun because I didn't know some of the details here. And I'm like, right. Okay. I can see some like storylines coming through here. So, so the elevator pitch would be we're thrown into a scenario where the ecology of the world has collapsed. And in order to deal with that, we've gone further on the same path that we're on, one could say, and we've kind of handed over power to the AI. And the AI is integrated into not all, but most human beings, everybody that's sort of in the mainstream of life, they have integrated the AI into their biology. And they keep getting sort of decision support of like, what is the right decision that we need to make here? And something happens that AI is taken over by another AI. And that AI seemed to have a plan to quote unquote solve the problem that it's been presented with. And that means that a lot of people, a lot of humans and a lot of life, living things need to die for it to sort of quote unquote save the world. And we get to kind of visit and hang out with the core group of people that are dealing with these issues. They're at the center of the company, in and around the center of the company that has deployed this AI into the world. We get to kind of follow their experience of these last days or weeks or hours of potentially of the world. That would be my elevator pitch. What did I miss?
That's super interesting. Thank you very much. I mean, it's kind of a multidimensional story. And I can actually go back to what's the seed of this book, because one realization after creating Tech Farm and Co9 co-living, like this community, like we have this intelligent, capable, motivated people who want to do good. And at the same time, when you calculate like how much resources each person used, then I don't actually think there were no one who actually lived within the planetary boundaries. And I was like, okay, but if this 50 people, we had 1,000 applicants before we opened the house, it was super hyped. And so we choose 50 people. And if they, including me, did not live within the planetary boundaries, like how would it be possible for 8 billion people to do that? And I was like, okay, we're going to end up in creating like the sixth mass extinction. And then I was like, okay, I was doing some research and like maybe somewhere here that will happen. And I started to research like how would the world look like? What technology do we have today? How does that develop? I talked to researchers, I talked to experts and so on. And then there's one question who people don't want to talk about. It's that we are a lot of human beings on this planet. And then I thought, okay, what if we end up in this situation where we are in the sixth mass extinction and we want to give human beings a last chance to continue as a species at the same time as creating a holistic long-term way of living. And I was like, maybe we should look at nature, like this mycelium network, who, like in the forest with the mushrooms, can spread like 10 miles and so on. It's even more than 10 miles. It's like 70 miles. And I was like, okay, what can handle more complexity than we can? It's AI. So what if you upload the patterns of nature into this AI, and that will have the, the intention of making the best decision for the whole. And then this AI creates a god called Unum. And Unum is Latin for many pieces that becomes one. And as your great presentation, you get to follow like this group of people called Unuminati, who kind of created this AI, and what they need to, their inner journey, what they need to meet in order for not to be eliminated themselves. And this book was, it took 6 years for me to write it. And I studied neuroscience, I studied the consciousness, I studied philosophy, I studied AI, I studied creative writing, I studied a lot of things. And I lived in nature. 1 year I lived on an island outside Stockholm. So in order, you talked about the space and being on an island without cars, with 80 inhabitants for a year, then nature is present. And it's possible to be, have space enough within your system in order to be available for the information that comes. And it's also easier, I think, when not being within a system with a lot of symbols, because you usually get affected in different ways. And I'm very happy to have finished the book, and it's sealed and it has its own life now. It's kind of like, yeah, my son, actually my 6-year-old son, started school today, and it was his first day. It was so beautiful. It's such a, like a milestone to be there as a parent and like see him walk away with hand in hand with his friends. And you're like, oh, I'm like getting goosebumps. It's like, it's so beautiful. So, so beautiful. I get a bit emotional now. One thing for me with the book is to create a foundation where we can actually talk about these things. Because ethics, moral values might be the difference between AI making us extinct or contributing to a more holistic way of living. And this also comes back to what we talked about before, like if you only live in the world of symbols and think that you are the story, not being connected to nature and yourself, then it's hard to take care of the existence that actually makes it possible for us to live. If I can't be a present parent, if I can't be there for my son and work and cooperate with the people who are in his life, and if I can't create circumstances which allows him to grow and to start school in a safe way and for him to learn to take his own steps in the way he is. I think that might be the most important thing. And of course, if I have more capacity and energy, I can put that into whatever is in the wider circles of life. But that has been like the book, one step at a time. Like every word needs to feel right. When it's done, I want to feel like handing over, like now it's done. It's kind of like my child, like he's ready for school and it feels good and he feels safe. And I just got a text message from his mom, like saying that everything went well and like a happy picture. So it's really beautiful. And you know how it is to have children who start school. How do you feel about that?
It's interesting. I what comes up for me right now when you say that, it's like I have this story sometimes that I'm like, and now things will change. and then at the same time, it's like what you were speaking to just now in terms of like the presence and the connection and the belonging and the being there and like that beingness and being that sort of foundation for them to jump off of with some sort of, you know, where whatever they need and whatever they would want. I mean that in a constructive sense, not in like I don't ever say no to my kids. I say no to them a lot, maybe too much sometimes, but just to be there, like with in the essence of things, to be there for them and to like work with them, and that continues. So it's like in one way there's like a handing off and there's like a, you know, but there's still like this deep connection of like it's tricky for me because I feel like on one end, wow, they're growing up, they're becoming their own people. Like I can see them acquiring the tools and starting manipulating the symbols and working with all these things that we've been talking about. And on the other end, I'm just like, whatever we are teaching in the schools and whatever we are currently thinking, whatever the mainstream of the thinking that we're doing today, that's what got us here. Which is sort of why that's one of the issues that I struggle with the most in talking to people and interacting with the world and trying to quote unquote achieve something, to build something, is that I've stopped believing in solutions. You know? And in one way or another, I feel like your book is one part of it. Like one of the big questions to me that it addresses is putting a question mark on on a particular solution. Like, oh, we'll just let AI fix it. And then it's like, there's just like, oh, okay, let's just let AI fix it. Let's see how that could work out. Not that it has to work out like that way, but it could work. So it's like, there's that shift from like, what can we do to like, okay, you know, let's really start focusing on like, how can we find a way? Like, how can we come together and find a way? Like, because that's probably what's needed, unless we're going to end up in some sort of super dystopic scenario. And that's, it comes up when you ask me about the school thing, because of the, I'm also handing them off into conventional thinking and thinking that has created a lot of pain and a lot of separation and a lot of not nice things that are, you know, a world that's not very suitable for humans, I think.
Yeah. That's actually, thank you for sharing. I've actually edited the book like 5 times since you read it. And one of the things that I went really deep into was, after the version you read, was like, the evolution. And I mean, there's already like Neuralink. You can also see like how we use our phones, how that impacts our thoughts, our emotions, and our decisions. And I mean, we all, through our history, we've been influenced by culture and stories and religions and so on. But now we have our phones and we have tracking of how our body's reacting. We have like cameras that are reading our face expressions and our voices and so on. And now Apple Vision came, so we kind of live in mixed reality. And the next thing might be an implant or a chip in the brain or maybe lenses. So you kind of live in a mixed reality. And there are also like great benefits of technology. I mean, now we're sitting here, you're in Iceland, and I'm in outside Stockholm in the archipelago, and we can have this conversation, and we can also share it with the world, which is really, really beautiful. We can be present with our children, like leaving them to the school, and at the same time, we can, when they're at school, we can like have this deep, deep conversation about World of Wisdom Pod, and like work with all the different layers. And so I think it's also really, really beautiful in that sense. But I'm trying to do in my own life and also in the book is to relate everything to how it is to be a human being. And with the implant and the school, it's a really, really good example, because there's quite a big chance that we will have superhumans or cyborgs in not that distant future. I would say it will probably be during the time my son Mio, who started school today, before his school ends. That will be a decision to make. And let's say 10 years from now, you start school. And there are two options. You can choose the elite school, which would probably be a normal school at that time, with superhumans who have access to all the information. And there will be a school as today, which will probably be like a special school for less developed human beings. Because that's a really tricky question as a parent, because do I really want my child to have technology in their brains or whatever it will be? Will it really be my child? And at the same time, if I don't, will my child survive? Will it be developed enough to be part of the sharing of resources? Will my child be possible to find a partner and to be able to reproduce his or basically my genes? And that's a really, really tricky question, because what's also explored a lot in the book is like, what is a meaningful life? And they have a lot of conversations and they go back and forth and they have different perspectives. And then it comes like, sure, you can discuss this question. But you also, the primary is that you actually adapt yourself to life circumstances of this existence. And that's basically like natural selection. Like if there is a gene, or if there is something that has more advantages than another manipulation, then that will survive, and the other gene or other way of behaving will die out. And so there's like two basic questions. The one is, I need to adapt in order to survive and reproduce. And the other question is, what is a meaningful life? And if you only focus on one, only focus on the meaning of life, you will probably you will probably not survive. And if you only focus on other thing, then it could become like some youth that have climate anxiety. It's like, yeah, sure, you can sacrifice yourself, but if you're not satisfied with this life, if you're not satisfied with this present moment, if this does not feel meaningful to you, then why are you recreating this reality. So if my intention, if my intention is to create this utopian community, but I am not satisfied with my present moment, then what kind of consciousness or intelligence or vibration am I really creating? And it doesn't matter if I have this beautiful story which the media and the politicians and everyone loves, because it gives them hope and it gives them a solution that does not mean that they need to sacrifice anything in their everyday life. And that's what I actually like about Greta Thunberg, because she actually walks the talk. Then you can think a lot about her rhetorics and everything, but she actually has quite simple, like, okay, you say you believe in science, science says this, why aren't you doing it? And she does not like trying to like, yeah, but my voice is so important, so I'm going to fly around the world and talk about this. She actually walks the talk. And yeah, but it's tricky. We're human beings, we have limited resources. We are confused. We're trying to navigate this chaotic existence.
It's... This is something that bubbles in me because it's so relevant. I'm trying to work on a blog post or an article around this organizational form that shape organization thing that we're doing, the RCO. And one of the two concepts that we're trying to put back into companies is responsibility and enoughness. Like those are two concepts that are very central to what we're trying to do. And one of the things that came to me as I was writing yesterday, like late, was that there's a Swedish professor of marketing called Mikael Dalian. I think you might know him as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
He talks so much about sort of how happiness is contagious, like how positive life choices are contagious. That if someone stops smoking, then it's more likely, like it's like 30% or 40% or 50% of the closest circle will stop smoking, and it will also like have an impact in at least one or two, at least one, but maybe even two more sort of steps away. And then so basically like how we live is contagious. So if we are afraid all the time and if we are like addicted to certain things and like enacting certain behaviors, that's going to propagate. If we can be more centered, more grounded, more whatever, that's going to propagate. And I just realized, you know, in a way that like what we do, the content of what we do, and that's what I'm hearing you speak to now. That's why I bring it up. Is maybe, probably, it's not that important, because probably no one's going to hear it. Like given the amount of information around there, like most likely. Yet, like how we do it and how we walk the talk and so forth, like just in the whatever, you know, 120 people that we have closest around us, or the 500 or up to 1500, you know, Facebook connections that actually will recognize us on the street, or whatever it is that it says that the amount of, you know, relationships that we can hold together. If we can keep showing that how in a different way, then that might be much, 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 much more influential than we would ever realize. And I think the key here is like, that we would ever realize it. It's never, you're never going to be able to go up and get the diploma or like get paid for that. But the influence that you've had might have been, you know, significant. It might have shifted someone else. So yeah, that comes up.
Yeah, that's a really good perspective. And I mean, that's also like, if you talk about the children again, it's like your children doesn't care about if you have like a good vocabulary or know a lot about how to speak about consciousness or awareness or meaning. The only thing they care about is, are you present or not? And they don't care what you say that they should do. They care, they act as you act, and they are as you are in many ways. And yeah, and that's what I also find, like, And that's what I've been doing like the last 6 years, like after being burned out. I mean, being like brutally honest, I wrote like 120,000 words in order to write myself true. Because every little like like even the slightest distortion that you do as like a drop in the ocean or a lake will have ripples. So if you find enough space between the observation of your own patterns, and you will learn kind of how your programming or your algorithm works, and you can see those patterns. And once you learn that, you can also see what happens when you interact with other people and the world around you. And I think that's kind of the only thing we can do. You can also like looking at modern research about free will, we probably don't have free will. We might have like an illusion of free will. And then it's basically like the Buddhist idea that you awaken and you see the thoughts and ideas and emotions pass by, kind of like the programming that we have. And and we can't really do much about it. We can become aware. I mean, we are who we are, and life is as it is. We can become aware and observe how it plays out. And I think once you do that, it's also easier to make more conscious decisions. The point of that is, what I want to say is that what I've been trying to do like the last 6 years is make decisions like, okay, how does this feel within me right now? And not, shit, this is such a great thing. I really want to do this. I just need to do this and that. And then I need these resources, these symbols, this person is really good for this, and this is going to be so good. And when we're ready, then this will have this amazing, amazing thing. And then I'm going to get exactly what I want. And like every distortion, like a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit, okay, fuck. Oh yeah, can you see that? And then like, shit. I kind of became this, how do you say, every action I took on the way became that person. And even if there, I might feel like, yeah, but I just did this because I wanted this. This is not really who I am. But in the interaction with the world around you, that's how you are perceived. So if you're content and if you're at peace, people around you will probably feel that as well. And then the need for symbols will decrease a lot.
Mm. I mean, it's interesting because I notice myself kind of clenching up a little bit when you speak in terms of you said like write yourself clean and or like when we speak of truth and things like that, it always gets like but that's probably like more a reflection of where I am at the moment. And the project that I'm engaged with at the moment is like to cultivate my attention so that I feel good when I follow it, like so that it helps me towards that peace. Like that seems to be like a really important heuristic, is like, does my attention and my habits help me to feel restful, present, and at peace. And other than that, I'm still pretty curious. Like, I don't know how universal that exploration is, but I'm trying to enact that in my own nervous system.
Yeah, I can take another, because in order to write this book in the best way, I also studied like 1.5 years at university in creative writing. And I did an essay. People thought that my writing was kind of like Karl Ove Knausgård, who is a Norwegian author, a very famous one, who people think are very true in his way of expressing himself. So I actually wrote an essay like comparing, I think it was called Authenticity in Creative Writing. So I read his novels, and I made a comparison with my own writing. And what my conclusion was, there is no truth. There is no truth. And not in the story's way. I think what he is capturing is that he's translating his everyday life in a filterless way. So you become very close to the experience. And the experience to me is being a human being. And that's what's universal. And if you connect it to what we started with, like connection, belonging, and meaning, that's like a layer on top of that. So I think like all art and everything that actually becomes timeless, like Leonardo da Vinci or Mozart or all of these people, it's something like it's without the human construction. It's life. And then vulnerability comes in. Because that's at least my observation. Like, what is it that makes you, people around you, feel calm and at peace and present? And vulnerability is being a human being, accepting that, and not trying to distort, not trying to convince, not trying to change. So right now, you and me, at this moment,
and that's something that I perceive from the book, to bring it back to that, to bring it back to some sort of, because it is, there isn't, it's a pretty conclusionless book. It's a, which I really appreciate it, because I do believe that art is about sort of the process. It's not necessarily about the end point to me. And what you're saying is also like this description of the unfiltered reality that seems to have struck a chord. It's like you're very close to the flow, and then that flow, as it interacts with people through different times in different contexts, it can kind of be recontextualized or like recaptured or re-understood to mean whatever it is, and hopefully the essence is sort of still there, because a lot of the pundits, if we look at, let's say, we mentioned religion a couple of times, but there's also like, if you don't read it for yourself, and if you don't do the work, and if you don't think for yourself, then you're thinking I love that like there's a Carol Sanford framework where she talks about borrowed ideas, analyzed ideas, and understanding, deep understanding, as like three levels of understanding and interacting with ideas. And so, and then we also have this misunderstandings sometimes around what it means to actually understand something, to actually stand under something, to let it fully sort of circulate and permeate your entire being, versus reading a book and being able to quote from it, or reading a book and being able to draw relevant conclusions from it and, you know, 10 other pieces of literature. Neither of those things are understanding. Understanding is something else. And I truly perceive that this book comes from an understanding, and there are fragments of that that I'm able to see because of where I'm at, and fragments that's invisible to me. I'm curious about one aspect of the book, though, because it is like it's very dystopic, and it is in some ways. I was like, oh, you know, you're like drawing. You've thought obviously thought about this deeply, and so there are some things in the scenarios and some of the decisions that are, let's say, new to me that I hadn't perceived before, or that hadn't sort of drawn those conclusions or connected those lines and so forth. And in a way, you helped me to draw those lines and connect those pieces of information together. So in a way, you're writing into existence this scenario that you are, that I don't hope we end up in. How do you think about that? Like, what if you're creating conditions for this to unfold?
Yeah, and when I got the idea, I just sat down 2017, and it just came out. So, like, basically, the whole plot came out in 40 minutes, and it was kind of the first story that I've written since I was in high school, and it was because I was curious. I was actually thinking about how can you create this in reality, and this is going to be really, really hard, and you need to be like Elon Musk and some other people in order to do that, and I don't want to live that kind of life. So what if I write it out? And usually I was just empty when writing, and it came like one letter at a time, and there was like, I was blown away so many times, like with the twists and some questions as for artificial relationships, for instance. That was a process that might was going on for maybe two weeks, like full time. And it's like it's also like, it's deeply disturbing in my own system to like feel and go into this scenes, because some things are quite disturbing and like mind blowing, actually. So my reality has also changed many, many times. Some sessions it changed 4 or 5 times during that day, and I'm still like, when I'm editing, like the last time, maybe I read it 100 times now, I still like got caught in the book. So I kind of like, oh no, I forgot, I like read like 5 pages. I was supposed to do like editing and looking for misspelling and stuff, but so some parts are very, I mean, I don't really take credit for it, because it doesn't not feel as I have written the book. It feels like there's like something else that's created this. It's not something I can think. I can't think this book. It's not possible. I can be, it's like an adventure. I'm on an adventure and I don't know where I'm going. I have a strong feeling that what I need to do, but I don't know what it is. And during that process, I learn. Yeah, and the book was finished a couple of weeks ago. And now I haven't even opened it. And now I'm learning how to play with the symbols of marketing and PR and book releases and all of these things. So what? Is there like something that comes up with you that was like a scene or an insight from the book which sort of connected the lines?
I mean, I don't have anything concrete right now. But what I think, what I was trying to get at was that in reading this and knowing you, I could sense what the project, quote unquote, was about. Like that there was a true curiosity and like a true level of kind of,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a true curiosity at the end of it. Like there's a like a deep exploration around what's going on here and like what's possible and like spelling some of these things out are important in order to be with them. And reading the book from a more conventional way of reading books, as if the storyline is the thing, or like that there is that you're trying to convey a particular opinion through your writing, that kind of then it gets a bit scary, because like you say, it's like, you know, let's just propose, like I don't know how deeply Elon Musk has thought about these things, but let's just take him as an example. Let's just propose that we give him the book and he's like, huh, this is a great idea. You know, this is what I want to do with Neuralink or whatever. You know, there is like that way. That's what I meant by like writing certain things into existence. Like,
yeah. And that's a really good point. And I was thinking about that. I saw a documentary first about like Marx and then about Nietzsche, and in those documentaries they kind of concluded like the communist was created from Marx, but they was not really taking his whole ideas. They like took some of it, and the same with the Nazis, like it was kind of created, or the seed was from Nietzsche's ideas. And so I was actually quite I was exploring that question quite deeply, because as you say, like, what if Elon Musk, for instance, and this is actually fun and quite scary, because the AI in the book Unum is called X, and Elon Musk has just released his company XAI, and say that they want to use AI to understand the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually was like, if you want to play like the symbol game with the PR and marketing, he likes memes and he likes Twitter. And what if you create like Elon Musk is reading the book and like, this is a good idea. And then he creates XAI, and he has the resources and he has the money and he has the power. So he will, and this is, that's like the, that this is such an interesting question. And it's the same with OpenAI, for instance. Suddenly, kind of like the book, actually, there is like mostly men with a lot of power and who create these things. And even if they have good intentions, they are still human beings. And you can see now, like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg, they are like trying to do a cage fight. So, like, how are their emotional maturity? Like, they have, like, basically the world in their hands. They have, like, our thoughts, our ideas, our cars. That's another thing, like, the Tesla. You're like, oh, it's a car. No, it's not a car. It's a robot. It's the same technique that they're using to in their Optimus robots, who seems to be able to actually... The Optimus robot seems to be able to create a new Optimus robot. So it's kind of like creating kind of scary world. And I think that's what something people do not see, that like when you actually understand that, okay, it looks like a car, but this is actually a robot. It's first robot, then it's a car. And they're getting so much data. And now it's like the most sold car in Sweden, for instance, and Europe. Before you had like Volvos, but now you have Teslas, and there's so much information. And Elon Musk is a fun example. I mean, he was going deep into Nietzsche and all these big philosophers when he was a teenager, and he was always getting almost gone crazy in that. And he was like, okay, physics might actually be what is more relatable. So he tried, kind of focused on that, and he's been quite successful, you could say, in order to translate his fantasy and his seeing of patterns in order to create that in a relatable way for our existence, like sending people to the space and re-electrifying our car industry. But it's like when in the end, it's like, wow, that's super inspiring and it's super great. But then like, okay, they're going to do cage fight. And it's like, that's interesting. Is that like the ethics, moral and values of the AI? And the AI is also like in a competitive market. So, and it's the same as evolution. I mean, the good guys might not be the ones who survives and might not be the ones who have the power. And that's coming back to what you said. That's one of the points with the book, to as real as possible, create a scenario which are relatable, which people can experience and feel with open questions. There's not really a solution, in order for more people to have a foundation in order to explore and discuss these questions. And I mean, I've already had, I have like 12 test readers. You were one of them. And the conversations, I mean, it's such a blessing to have this conversation and to see other people's worlds and discuss these questions, because these are existential questions if you go deeper, which we have asked ourselves, I think, at least until when we got like self-conscious. But now, like, the stakes are super high, depending on what we agree on and how much responsibility we take in these questions, that could be the difference between us surviving or us becoming extinct. The difference between AI becoming our god or our servant. And I'm really looking forward to discuss this with people who are curious about these questions. And for me, to learn more, because I'm open in this process. I needed to make a decision. I needed to create a story. But now the book is finished and I'm releasing it, and people hopefully will read it, and I can open up for the next process.
Yeah. Beautiful. I think that's a good pause point in this conversation. I have one kind of thing that I wanted to send anyone who ends up reading the book. Maybe that's even two, but I still want to. One of the things that I loved the most about the book was that there's definitely like a main flow of the story. There's a big river that's flowing in a certain direction that shows you certain things. But there are also like all these little branches that are there, and like all these little characters that are, let's say, hidden in plain sight. That one can hang out with and spend some time with and perhaps imagine who they are and what they are and what they are not, and what they seem to be and what they doesn't seem to be, in like in terms of importance and in terms of what's directing the flow, so to say, of this main storyline. I think that's very unclear, and at the same time, I think if you read the book, then it's not that unclear at all. But there's a lot of fun stuff sort of hidden in plain sight in the book, and it was a fun experience to read something that challenges my attention, because there are these like little hooks that are there. And then as we have been talking about it afterwards, those were very much intentional. And it's like, it was very nice to be like, oh yeah, yeah, mm-hmm, I felt that. Yeah, I could see that. Or and to get the confirmation that that's not just my imagination working, but it's actually there as a possibility, as a different possibility, as a different story, as a different reality, as a different person to identify with, or whatever one would argue. Are there any final words on your behalf, on your end? Is there something else you would like to say that we haven't been able to cover or uncover or point to in this conversation?
I don't know, actually. There is a quote which you liked in the book. And maybe I should read that. I'm going to try and translate it to English in my brain as I read it. Is it okay for me to do that?
Please.
Dear Alice, don't forget that the apple falls when it's mature. If you take it too early, it is sour. If you take it too late, it's rotten. The cycles of nature is step by step without shortcuts. In nature, it is the process that decides, not time.
I love that quote.
So if we ask the process of this podcast,
it's interesting when you talk about process in that way, because in a way it's like, oh, there's so many other things. And yet I feel like this was a whole. And it could have been a lot of other things, but it wasn't. So I feel complete. What about you?
Yeah. That was my feeling as well. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, but before we end, I wanted to give you the opportunity to point people so that you, now that you build your world empire and X and become a best-selling author, where do people go to find out about the book if their curiosity is sparked?
They can go into either my name, Fredrik Forss, maybe you can put a link, .com, or uniminati.com. It will be translated into English. If someone has a publishing company that works with different markets in Sweden, I'm happy to take a meeting. But also, there's a lot of people who are actually talked about, oh, this should be so good, great as a game. And I got like goosebumps over my body like for 5 minutes when the first person said it, because I think that will suit the book and the scenario super well, as well as people's own development. And I think it would be not too advanced technically to create that as a game as well. So, yeah, I'm open for that as well. But they can go into my website and they will find contact information. And yeah.
And it's out on the 1st of September?
Yes, in Swedish, it's out 1st of September. And I'm gonna I'm available for the book and I'm available for the process like the next year. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm really looking forward to see what life brings in this stage.
Thank you so much, Fredrik, for this conversation, wide-ranging and kind of branchy as it tends to be when we speak. And thanks for also writing the book. I don't usually say that, but I do appreciate it. And it did something to my nervous system, which has been good since I read it. Thank you.
I'm super happy. I'm happy to be on the podcast, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I feel energized and curious to see what the rest of the day will bring. So thank you very much, Amit.